So my name is Kaylee, for those of you that don't know already, and this is my response to Ancient Apocalypse Episode 3, Sirius Rising.
Well, hi Kaylee. My name's Dan, and this is my response to your response to Ancient Apocalypse Episode 3, Sirius Rising. So I guess you could call this Not So Sirius Falling. I don't know, you could make a dad joke here of your own if you'd like. Hello and welcome to Dedunking. I'm Dan, and in this episode we're going to be responding to Kaylee's response to Ancient Apocalypse of Episode 3, Sirius Rising. I skipped Episodes 1 and 2 because I'm kind of getting sick of responding to those. It's like everybody that responds to Ancient Apocalypse starts at Episode 1, and I have talked about Nan Madal till I'm blue in the teeth, and she had a lot to say about Maltus that was unique. She's traveled there quite a bit and has a friend that's there, and so I figured that we would talk about her Episode 3 first. If you guys really want me to, I'll backpedal to Episodes 1 and 2. I hate to have to go down this road, but right out the gate, I know most of my subscribers are tremendous people. I almost never have to moderate comments, and like my filter that catches the automated stuff that YouTube automatically filters for is literally empty all the time, except when I upload a video to somebody like Potholer, and then I get the "Dan, you're an idiot" comments that I just go ahead and approve and laugh at. But I never have problems with the comments. I've had one comment that I've been like, "Dude, I would appreciate it if you didn't say that stuff in my comment section." But I have seen comments on Twitter that make me feel like I have to say this anyway. Please keep your criticisms of Kaylee like you would anybody else that I respond to. Talk about her ideas. Talk about her personality if you honestly feel that it's worth addressing. But keep it there. Don't do any of the innies or any of the isms or any of the stuff that's going to make me have to start slapping you around. If I so much as smell two fedoras in my comment section, I will start shutting shit down faster than you can roll your eyes. So please, I'm sorry to even have to say this, but let's just... I don't want any repeats of what I've seen on Twitter. Not on my end of the internet, anyway. So having said that, we'll get past that and go forward.
So for the past 3 videos now, I've been making videos giving counter-arguments to Graham Hancock's Netflix series Ancient Apocalypse. And in these videos, I try to remain as fair as possible as I can, while just focusing on the information that he's giving us in the show. While I understand many comments under these videos giving information about his books and the background and things that he has said or have happened in the past, that is not the focus of these videos. These videos focus only on the show, because that is what people who have no clue who Graham Hancock is will see, who are unaware of the rest of his work. So maybe after watching the show, will they look for more additional information? But we all know most of them won't. Therefore, my videos focus on what he says in the show.
Now, I understand that that position is conducive to being able to make videos about Hancock without going through his extensive body of work. The problem is she's openly admitting out the gate that she knows some of the things that she's saying aren't accurate representations of what Hancock's position actually is. And while Ancient Apocalypse is very popular, and being on Netflix certainly hasn't hurt it any. There's a large number of people that have gone to Joe Rogan and to have bought his books, and the people that already came from there that have watched this. So I do personally feel that that's a position that is, I'll be honest with you, if this was on Reddit and she was saying that exact thing, I would be far less kind than what I'm saying right now. This is a position that I find intellectually dishonest. However, the fact that she's making a video does make that a lot different. If you're going to go arguing in comment sections and throwing mud, that's one thing. I can't expect... I get how it is. You spend a lot of time working on a video, so it ended up being like, I need to go through how many fucking hours worth of shit just to get just to know what dudes talk? So I understand where she's coming from, but I do not like this position.
So the episode starts with Graham Hancock saying that he has a problem with the mainstream view of the development of civilization. That because of the notion that our own civilization in the 21st century is the apex and the pinnacle of human achievement, If we objectively look into our history, there has never been tangible evidence that a more sophisticated and advanced civilization has existed before us. So therefore, yes, at this point in time, we are the apex. I understand that Graham believes this, and he talks about it a lot, that we are not the apex, that there was a lost ancient civilization. But actual, real, and tangible and dated evidence of such a civilization does simply not exist. Or at least we haven't found it yet. If you want to remain open-minded to the possibility, I am open-minded to the possibility. If we were to find tangible evidence, I'm here for it.
And now for those of you who've watched my response videos before, you think you know what I'm going to do here, but I'm not actually going to play that note. I've got a different note that I want to play this time. So I'm going to discuss basically my... Seriously? My I want to point out to people that haven't seen me before, including Kaylee, that I don't have this, like, Hancock is right about everything position, and this will be right off the bat, where I'm going to go ahead and concede to you right out the gate. I don't think that this civilization was advanced remotely as close to us, let alone to the level that Hancock would say. My opinion would be, like, at best, Bronze Age level. Now, I'm an atheist, so I don't have any spiritual beliefs, so that has a lot to do with it, but compared to Hancock, right? But my point is here is that it's important to take that into account going in, that I'm not defending this like Atlantis flying Ptolemy jets around and freaking dropping Stone Age nuclear weapons on other freaking civilizations. Lemuria was not nuked by the Atlanteans. It was actually the other way around.
So the timeline of Malta shows that it was first settled around 5900 BCE. Nearly 8,000 years ago, Stone Age farmers that brought the first domesticated animals and plants with them happened around 5900 BCE. Later on, in 3600 BCE, after approximately 2300 years, they started creating the first massive monument on the island, which is Gigantia. So the Maltese archaeologists are very aware of the evidence the Neolithic farmers left behind of the learning curve to eventually be able to build incredible structures like Gigantia.
Well, normally I don't put my arguments like this because it sounds all debate bro style, like, oh, source, but some things you just don't really need a source for, but in this case, I'm not finding anything that confirms what she says here. There's the three temples that were built around the same time, the Gigantia one and Hagar Kwim, and I'm spacing the name of the other one. But there's three of them basically that were built basically contemporarily, and that's like the oldest three structures on Malta. I don't know where she gets the idea that they made other stuff that built up to this. Now, maybe there's a peer-reviewed paper that I didn't find. I did look pretty hard, but I didn't see anything. So if you do end up seeing this, Kaylee, if you could, like, hand me some information in that direction, that would be great, because I don't see anything that says that. And again, I'm not trying to be like, oh, you didn't provide a proper source. I'm just saying that I looked into this, and it seems to me like this is a claim that I can't confirm.
In the episode, Graham points a picture of the work that the archaeologists did when it comes to the dating of these ancient structures on the Maltese Islands, which is a picture that's very extremely skewed and not close to the truth at all. The truth is that the structures on the Maltese Islands have been researched very thoroughly. And for those who are interested, may I absolutely point you in the direction of my good friend Laura from the YouTube channel Megalith Hunter. She lives in Malta and has extensively researched the Maltese structures, the card ruts, and the entire history of Malta.
Now, she had a bit in the video where Laura from Megalith Hunter, like, spiels out a bunch of layers and stuff from the cave we're going to talk about in a little bit, but I'm going to have to cut that out for time. But I do want to point out that Laura's channel is worth subscribing to. I'm subscribed to it with the little bell click and everything, and I've been following her on Twitter since before I even know her and Kaylee were buddies. She is an informative archaeologist type of person. If she's not a real archaeologist, oops. I don't research every single person I follow. I just look at the stuff that they put out and determine what direction I'm sniffing, right? Anyway, she is worth subscribing to. So there's that. As far as the archaeology on Malta goes, now I could be wrong here, and this is one of the reasons that I was happy to address Kaylee, because I've spoken about this a few times in the past, and she's far more intimately knowledgeable about Malta. It seems to me very much that there is a kind of a touristy, nationalisty, cultural pride thing attached to those temples where even when the science does say the island was uninhabited between the building of these temples and today, and these ain't the descendants of the builders, you don't really see that when you look at Malta's stuff. As a matter of fact, if you start Googling this stuff, you'll notice that most of your links bring you to tourist stuff, and those are the timelines conveniently omit the times that the people were not there. As a matter of fact, you have to get into Google Scholar and fairly deep before you start finding that. It's a very typical problem we seem to have on islands where tourism is very important to their GNP, basically, so they do whatever it takes to keep that dollar flowing in. I mean, Malta will, anything from the Bible to the Iliad to you know, Atlantis, right? You just ask, and they're going to hand it to you as long as you show up and spend some money.
So Graham makes the strange assumption that the artifacts discovered at the sites could have been younger than the monuments themselves, that they aren't of the same age, that he thinks that these artifacts were left behind on a later date. While the Fraxys project on Malta in recent years has done extensive research for a duration of like 5 years on Malta, including in their research were archaeological excavations, analysis of Neolithic human remains, radiocarbon dating, and optical luminescence dating. So we know that it was the Neolithic farmers who eventually created the structures on the islands.
Now, the first thing to mention here is the Fraxys Project link that she provides, much like her comments about the different sciences they did. It's kind of generic and it's not very informative. Stefan Milo really kind of nailed it down, and he's right here. Another point that I'll basically concede against Hancock is that they dug underneath those pillars at Gigantea 1. So when they go underneath the thing, you're getting datable material from down there. Nobody's putting a Hershey's bar from freaking the wrong date down there to trick us thousands of years later. So it's pretty safe to assume that what's under there is pretty accurate to the construction. Probably even a little bit older because they probably leveled the ground a little before they dropped the rock. But there's another thing worth mentioning here, too, and it's kind of this difference between the investigative journalist that Hancock is and the scientist that Kaylee is. Science tends to hedge its bets and be careful, and it's not going to extend itself very far. So when it comes to the dating of a site, it's like, well, this is the oldest datable material. This is the oldest datable material we have. But, like, just, like, for argument's sake, Kaylee, pretend that your house is made out of stone. It's completely undateable. So the only things that are in it are your stuff. And I'll say, for instance, tomorrow you move. Is there going to be any datable material in that house? Maybe a tiny, tiny bit. Is any of it going to be contemporary with the construction of that house? Probably not, right? So that kind of logic really applies to where Hancock's coming from, but it's the kind of thing that a scientist really can't go down because that's just into speculation, right? And there's really no way to confirm that stuff. I mean, you can stretch it a few hundred years, maybe, but that's about as far as you can really take it before mother scientists can be like, dude, fucking roll that back some.
Graham doesn't believe in the discovered evidence on the islands. He says that none of the prehistory of Malta stacks up. So he says that for the in total of the 19 structures on the Maltese islands, which, honestly, there are more, the builders would have needed a lot of manpower, and he is of the belief that it would be too much manpower. A claim I honestly feel is very unjustified, especially because of the amount of archaeological research that has been done on the islands.
No, I'm sorry, I don't think the amount of archaeological research has much to do with that, to be honest with you. We've got temples like Gigantea 1 and 2 that are leaning against each other, literally. I mean, we can tell which one was built first by the fact that one's borrowing the wall from the other one, right? Okay, now this is a little bit weird. Normally, when people reuse a site for a temple, they knock the old bastard down or they build on top of it. They don't, like, build next to it. And they do this all over the island, and they're all over the place, really close to each other. It's weird, and they're not different in the regards that you would expect if they were all praying to different gods.
So Graham feels the need to ask the question, who really built Gigantea and when? He tells the myth of a giant woman who built the Gigantea temple, although I find it strange that he tells this myth as if it was a story going back to the Neolithic temple builders or even before then. What most of the people watching his show and this video may not know is that the Maltese islands have been completely abandoned more than once, starting when the original Neolithic temple builders disappeared around 2500 BCE. For many decades afterwards, the islands were uninhabited until a new influx of Bronze Age immigrants came to the islands and settled there.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, this seems to be the kind of thing that the archaeologists are chill with, but the Maltese people are not so much chill with. And if you look, I'll put a link here and picture and all this crap, but I'll put a link down below of an article that's like just one of these tourist things, and it's got the timeline of Malta, and there's no time when there was no people there since people first showed up. I guess we built those temples too. Come visit Malta, it's national pride. And I'm not saying that this is like 100% it. Again, Kaylee, if you could weigh in on that, but I would appreciate if you look into it a little bit first, because it does honestly seem like this is an issue there. It seems like anything that would possibly suggest that the current Maltese population are not the people that built those temples is perfectly fine in the circles of academia, but not so much on the island of Malta.
Much later on, during the Arab-Byzantine Wars, Malta was practically uninhabited as well for over 170 years. So the myth he tells of this giant is a lot younger than he leads the viewer to believe, and it doesn't originate in Maltese prehistory, but it actually originates in the Maltese Middle Ages. That's a massive difference.
This is really hard to confirm, and again, not trying to be some debate bro, but I can't run this down. It looks to me like this whole entire story may well be bullshit, which doesn't really matter one way or the other, but this is what I do, is I fact check the debunkers, and this fact seems pretty spotty to me, no offense.
He then says in the episode that he isn't of the belief that literal giants ever roamed the earth, although the giants in the myths and legends that he speaks of could have simply been people suffering from gigantism, or otherwise known as giantism. For example, the most famous and well-known person with this condition is Robert Wadlow, who was 2 meters and 72 centimeters in height, which equates to 8 feet and 11 inches. That's damned tall.
Now, Kaylee talks a lot about traveling and stuff in her videos, and I have to cut all that out because I'm trying to do a response video and all that stuff takes a long time, but I'll go ahead and weigh in about a little traveling type of thing here because I'm poor white trash and I don't really get to travel very much, especially as a single dad, but I did grow up in southern Illinois, which is where Robert Wadlow lived and died, and his home is, or was, a museum. I'm sure it still is. And it had a big old statue out front. But more importantly, I'd been there like 3 or 4 times as a kid. We would go there as field trips and shit with the school and the Boy Scouts and all that stuff. Big, big-ass chair. They had these big shoe prints you could put your feet on that were like a wooden board that had like 2 big footprints outlined, like waltzing type of instructional things, but like the size of my head. And dude was big. But it's worth pointing out that, these aren't the people who will be building these big things because, like she said, that their bodies are messed up. Robert Wadlow died from, if I remember right, it was an infection on his foot from a blister that ended up killing him. His body was like, his immune system was shit compared to ours just because it was trying to keep up with something that his heart and his lungs and his liver and everything else just wasn't built to accommodate. So, to be honest with you, I'm kind of wondering why she went down this road to begin with, because it's pretty obvious that Hancock is going to as somebody who makes videos about this kind of stuff, I well realize you have to like explain things like that. So of course Hancock is saying, I don't think that Nephilim are real.
So Graham wonders that if the prehistoric timeline of Malta could be wrong, that when the Neolithic farmers from Sicily came to Malta, the megalithic structures on the islands were already there, created by a far more advanced society that came to Malta long before. He also doesn't think this advanced society sailed to Malta, but that they walked there. As most of you may not know, Malta hasn't always been an island. Before the end of the last ice age, there used to be a land bridge connecting Sicily to North Africa. When the sea levels rose, Malta eventually became an archipelago. He doesn't believe the archaeological claim that there has been no evidence of humans on Malta before 7,900 years ago, nearly 8,000 years ago, that there hasn't been any evidence found on Malta of humans back when it was still connected to Sicily in the Ice Age. Yes, on Sicily, archaeologists have found evidence of occupation going back to approximately 12,000 years. None of this evidence have ever been found on Malta.
This is a great example of what I was talking about earlier with the difference between an investigative journalist and a scientist. The investigative journalist is just kind of looking at this kind of more realistically, in my opinion. The scientist is hedging their bets to the point of kind of incredulity. Look at how close Sicily and Malta were when they were connected. And I mean, you're talking a hop, skip, and a jump for them to show up over there. And we know that we get less than 1% of the shit in the fossil record, in the archaeological record. We know it's almost nothing that we find. So to be like, well, we had people on this side of the street, but once they cross that street, we've got no evidence for anybody over there because we didn't dig any up, to me is a little bit on the absurd side. But it, again, I understand that's how science is done, but using that as a like a wall to say there is no way that we had anybody down here, therefore it's like, no dude, we have solid evidence that they were freaking right next door. So using that as a way to exclude this hypothesis, in my opinion, is a bunk.
Although Graham says that's not entirely true, as he then starts to talk about the Jar d'Alam cave, a cave that I've visited myself as well. He's taken to the cave by Dr. Anton Mifsud, who he says is the president of the Prehistoric Society of Malta. This paints a picture of Anton Mifsud being a historian. I actually Googled Dr. Anton Mifsud, and all I was able to find is that he's a consultant pediatrician who spends his spare time looking into Maltese prehistory. He's not an official historian, archaeologist, has nothing to do with that. He's a pediatrician consultant privately. So I was really disappointed that he made Dr. Anton Mifsud look like a very high-standing official in Maltese Historical Society, who did independent research that has caused great controversy. Yes, it has caused great controversy. He's not an official historian. Again, sorry.
Here's something I do in almost every video I respond to people in. Here is an absolute concession, but I'm going to do the legwork for you. Yes, he's a pediatrician. However, he has participated in some excavations. There is his credentials right there. But why don't you scroll down and look at the stuff that the man's published? Do you see the word Atlantis there? Do I need to go into detail as to how that might just taint the perception of the work that he puts out into the public and how you guys will look at that? Yeah, you probably should have drugged that one out. No offense, but this is something that if I was in your position and I was going to attack the man's credentials, I would probably have used this as like point number two. Number one, he's a pediatrician. Number two, he's an Atlantis hunter.
So in 1917, two molars were discovered inside the Jar d'Alam cave. Later on, it was found that these were pterodont molars, which is the enlargement of the pulp chambers inside the molar. It's most common in the permanent molar teeth of humans, and it has also been found in Neanderthal molars. So yeah, Neanderthals were very well known for having pterodont molars. Therefore, the theory of Neanderthals in Malta came to life. Graham immediately asks if these two teeth that were discovered were classic Neanderthal teeth in this episode, and of course Dr. Anton Mifsud says yes. He is, you know, a proponent of the Neanderthal man in Malta theory, a theory that has been proven to not be true. It's very controversial.
Well, it kind of feels like Kaylee does like I do and doesn't write a full script. She writes outlines and a few key sentences and just kind of rolls with it. It kind of feels like that, especially in times like this when the first thing that she says and this is the last thing she said don't make no sense together. If the Neanderthals on Malta were proven to not be true, it wouldn't be highly controversial, right? These two things are kind of mutually exclusive. And the Neanderthals on Malta have not been proven to not be true. I mean, come on. It was connected on a land bridge. We know that Neanderthals were right there. And we got a couple of teeth there that may or may not be Neanderthal teeth, depending on who you ask. To say that it's proven to not be true was the kind of thing that, as I've mentioned before, you don't see scientists saying these kinds of things when they talk about this shit with other scientists. It's only when they're going to debunk pseudoscience that they get out this, we know for a fact, this is certain, there is no question, it's been proven.
In the episode, Anton Mifsud says that the molars were found at the bottom of the stalagmites, making it seem like they were a lot older than they are. In reality, these teeth were actually found in a flood deposit near the stalagmite, near the fossilized remains of red deer, and it's an Ice Age or Pleistocene deposit. As we all know, there were no Neanderthals later on in the last bit of the Ice Age.
Now, she's definitely going to try with the teeth here in a minute to say that they were flooded in there and they don't really belong where they're at. But that layer that she's talking about, that's like 10,000 to 18,000 years ago. So, okay, fine. They're not Neanderthal teeth. So now what does that say about the peopling of Malta? I mean, there's not really a good way that this plays out either way. Where they were found says that they're god-dang old.
The teeth may or may not belong to the same individual. Since this cave was flooded multiple times in ancient history, these teeth may have actually washed in during the Ice Age, which would explain why only teeth were found and not other human remains in this cave.
Well, yeah, I guess the teeth being flooded in, there's a possibility since the place has been flooded a bunch, but we know why teeth are the only thing that show up frequently in the archaeological record. If I may, teeth are disproportionately prevalent in archaeological sites. Scientists often find dozens or hundreds for every skeleton or skull. That's because the enamel covering a tooth is already 97% mineral and teeth are stronger than bone, so they're more likely to survive, writes anthropologist Peter Unger. Well, to be honest, these are both potential reasons here that the only thing that we find there are teeth. As a matter of fact, it'd be pretty possible for us to find a bone shard or two if it was like swept in there from a skull at that time during a flood. But it is tough to say. What we can say for certain is that this is not an accurate statement to make.
The Neanderthal man in Malta theory, a theory that has been proven to not be true. There's actually a hot debate ongoing about these teeth, the dating of these teeth, and who these teeth belong to and how they got there. Therefore, I am extremely disappointed in Graham for saying in this episode that this is proof of Neanderthals walking across the Ice Age land bridge into Malta. He can't know, simply because it is absolutely not a fact. It's not clear proof, and for him to state it like this really is a bad thing. I was really disappointed here. It makes the viewer, unknown with Maltese history, skeptical about the archaeological research that has been done on the islands.
Why, yes, that would paint archaeology in a bad light on Malta if you took what Graham Hancock said there at face value. Kind of like if someone were to take what you said here at face value.
The Neanderthal man in Malta theory, a theory that has been proven to not be true.
It would make the archaeology on Malta seem far more conclusive than it actually is, right?
The teeth may very well be Neanderthal, as Anton Mifsud claims they have been confirmed to be by three separate anthropologists. Couldn't find his publication on that, but okay. And the teeth may very well have been washed inside the cave and therefore laid there in the flood deposits for many thousands of years before the first human settlers even came to Malta 7,900 years ago. They may have washed there, laid there, been discovered there, and dated. We don't know. That's the beauty sometimes of history. We don't know things for a fact.
And I'm not going to keep beating the same dead horse over that. Yes, we don't know these things for a fact. Moving on, she cites an article that was written in response to Ancient Apocalypse. It's funny because I cited the same thing myself as evidence in a different direction. She's citing as evidence that the teeth aren't real Neanderthal teeth, excuse me. I cited it as evidence that there's still pushback on Malta despite scientific evidence. Now, she is right, actually. You look into this and he didn't publish his findings, Dr. Misfoot, so you can't really look and see what's up with those teeth still. To this day, they're just in this limbo-y spot that nobody knows what the hell's going on with, which is just great, by the way. I love that. But if you don't think that's weird, what the hell's going on there? Why hasn't Malta put this shit to bed? Again, I have my personal reasons, and it has to do with tourism / national pride. But again, as well, we're talking about teeth there that if they're not Neanderthal and they're human, that really messes up the dates as well. And the only thing at that point that you can say is they were probably flooded in there. And if you're going to start doing that, we kind of have to look at things in a little bit of different light across the board. Again, it is a possibility, but I wouldn't say it's the only possibility.
He then shows the famous card ruts on Malta as more proof of this ancient advanced civilization. I myself have created a theory video about these card ruts and what they could have possibly been. It is true that the so-called cart ruts on Malta are a mystery, but that doesn't mean that it was evidence of an advanced lost civilization. They're simply just a mystery, because we don't understand why they would do something, because we can't look inside their head and we can't ask them.
Now see, had you made the same kind of mistake here in your position that you did with your misspeaking of what you said about the Neanderthals being proven to not have existed in Malta, which you obviously rolled back with the words that you said later, and it seems like the kind of thing you probably would have caught in post if you would have said, I do things like that myself. Again, it's not scripted, I get it, it's outlined and that's about it. But had you done that here and then said, well, yeah, and I made this other video about it, so you should check all that out, I could very easily say this.
So maybe after watching the show, will they look for more additional information? But we all know most of them won't. Therefore, my videos focus on what he says in the show.
I'm sure you can see why that would be a problem, right? That's why I don't like this position. And again, I understand that it's for you to make a video, but in this position here, had you said something that was asinine that I felt like I needed to dig into, I would have had to have watched your video in order to have remained intellectually honest and have portrayed you properly in this situation, despite what I think other people would be doing here. Because here's the difference. When somebody comes to you and watches Ancient Apocalypse, look at Milo from Any Minute Man. Look at the title. I watched Ancient Apocalypse so you don't have to. You say yourself in your video that, since many of you may not know, Malta, blah, blah, blah. Well, if we've watched Ancient Apocalypse, they certainly know. But you recognize that a good chunk of your audience is not going to have watched it. So they're just going to watch what you have to say on the matter. So it's the same kind of thing here, where it's like you have a responsibility here to make sure that you portray this stuff accurately. So if you miss something or you just kind of do it without looking into things, it's kind of frustrating.
He does credit the archaeologists for accepting that the builders of Menhyra had knowledge about the cosmos, which is nice. I go in depth about this in that video I made about Menhyra. So yeah, highly recommend. Watch it. He then has Leni Reydijk on the show, a Dutch woman. But yeah, Leni Reydijk, the author of the book Sirius, Star of the Maltese Temples. They both then theorize about how the other temples on Malta should have faced other stars as well, and that the precession of the Earth changes the night sky over time. And therefore, the temples must be much older to fit the stars that they think these structures should have faced. I mean, they could have just faced any constellation, for any reason. A different, unimportant star to us, a lost geographical feature on the island, or whatever. Maybe they didn't face anything. Why should they necessarily? Because they don't necessarily need to. Menhyra may very well have been the only temple on the Maltese Islands to have faced certain cosmological alignments.
Menhyra, that's a temple I was trying to remember earlier. But anyway, yeah, there's some astronomical alignments there. There's been a lot of archaeoastronomy work done there. And Leni Reydijk, I don't even know. I'm sorry, I know you, that's a pet. I don't even know how to pronounce these names without making myself looking like an idiot. But her work, as we'll discuss, is not something that I'm a fan of at all. However, it still should not be misrepresented, and it still needs to be put in its proper context so that the viewer can understand when they go to watch these videos and say, hey man, what's up with Ancient Apocalypse? In my opinion, this shit should be laid out for them.
So they used an app that tracks the stars back into the historical timeline. I'm honestly unsure about this state-of-the-art technology that they used. They didn't tell the viewer the name of the app, and I've not yet heard of one such application that was verifiably correct. So using it to support your theory that show that all the Maltese structures faced the star Sirius at one point in time does give you some fun results that you can then use to support your theory, but it's not verifiably accurate.
Okay, I'll put a link down below that goes through and talks about the use of stellarium in archaeoastronomy. And basically, they have a complaint about it. She is right there. And this paper is from 2016, by the way. The complaint is that it doesn't have the asterisms from like all these different time periods that you would want. So like if you're looking at ancient Egypt, they still make you use the old Greek ones, even though there's ancient Egyptian ones that should be in the database. That's their complaint. So I'm not sure that that's exactly the software that's used, but this there's no good software for it. There's papers that have been written on it by other archaeoastronomers too, Orofino, who I mentioned in my last full-length video. But I can't access that dude. It's $50, and I've sent him an email, but I haven't heard back yet, and who knows. I'm not some academic, so, and I don't speak Italian, so I may never hear from him. But my point is that this is something that has been spoken on, and just say, oh no, it's worthless. Well, no, there's a lot of work that's been done here. Furthermore, before this kind of software was around, we had archaeoastronomy. So it's not like that we can't do this. It's not unverifiable. This is something that we were absolutely able to like look at and see, does this pan out or not? And her alignments seem to pan out. The problem is, we'll discuss in a minute, but her alignments do seem to pan out for the dates that she suggests and the temples she suggests. This is true.
Yes, Sirius is indeed the brightest star in the night sky, but it's not the only important star for people in ancient times. But to fit their theory, they think it is proof as to why the Maltese builders created this many temples. Because they say, as Sirius shifted position in the night sky over time, it fell out of each temple's line of sight, which then forced the temple builders to build a new structure with a slightly different orientation. According to their theory, Gigantiao would be the youngest temple, which honestly makes no sense because it was dated at the oldest to 3600 BCE, and it's the oldest temple dated on Malta.
All right, one of the things that's worth mentioning again is that Gigantia was dated by them digging under the pillars. So that's going to be older than you would otherwise think because they're going to have leveled that ground. So they're not going to have dug a pit like archaeology looks for. They're going to have destroyed each layer one at a time. So to make the ground level for that, down to as close to rock as they can get or as close to something hard, bedrock ideally, I would assume, but I haven't excavated at the site. But anyway, my point is that the date is probably older than the actual structure is in this case. This is where I was saying again about the investigative journals thing. It's not too difficult to understand what I'm saying here. In this case, it is probably a little bit older based on that. However, what really comes into a fact here and what's enjoyable to me, and one of the things that I love about archaeoastronomy and one of the things that seems to drive archaeologists batshit crazy is the alternate hypothesis that you get. And one of the things that archaeoastronomers have looked at when they looked at Malta, paper I love to cite when I do this because it's got Michael Hoskins. And Michael Hoskins, I haven't really spouted about him much, but the dude was like a... He was one of the early badasses of archaeoastronomy, and he did a lot of work on Malta as soon as those temples became like mainstream in the pre-internet days. Let me read a little bit what they had to say when they're going in at the start of their paper. Within the temple period, archaeologists distinguish several phases on the evidence of pottery types and decoration on pottery and stone slabs. Of these, two are important for us, the Gigantia phase, 3600 to 3000 BC, and the Taxarian phase, 3000 to 2500 or a little later. Temple building then came to an abrupt end for reasons that remain shrouded in mystery. During the millennium of temple building, there was development in the plan of temple structures, while building techniques, stone dressing, and decoration also became increasingly sophisticated. Archaeologists use this development to propose a sequence in which the temples were supposedly constructed, and although this is often supported by pottery and other finds, the sequence is sometimes uncertain in detail. We shall rely on two broad phases, which are securely established, and on structural evidence, as, for example, when the later temple is erected against the side of the existing one, and the building sequence is therefore indisputable. Most, but not all, temples were built in groups of two or more on the same site in successive stages. As you can see there, they're willing to accept the archaeologists' finds for the most part, but they're also looking at it and saying they might not be 100% conclusive for the same reasons that I'm talking about here. You've got a bunch of temples that are right next to each other, all being used at around the same time period. Just because you find pottery that's 500 years before another one doesn't exactly mean that this one's 500 years older than that other one. As a matter of fact, it may not mean that at all. I could go off about this stuff for a while, but my point here is that the archaeoastronomers that actually look at this stuff are willing to accept that these temples may not have the exact date range that archaeologists confirm.
So in my honest armchair archaeological opinion, they used faulty star map data to fit their theory of the temples facing astronomical alignments to the star Sirius over thousands of years, which then fits his narrative of an ancient advanced civilization coming to Malta to build these temples around 11,000 years ago, instead of the Neolithic farmers that came to the islands and are credited with the creation of these structures. Even though there's no evidence beside a faulty star map, which he used to fit his theory.
Well, that's not exactly true, is it? We've got a couple of human teeth, since you guys don't want to call them Neanderthal teeth. I guess we've got a couple of human teeth from between 10 and 18,000 years ago there. I mean, you can say they were flooded in there, but that's speculative, isn't it? So you could say there is some evidence for people being around there back then. But disregarding that, I want to talk about this whole faulty star map, faulty data crap when it comes to the stars. Excuse me, but this is just frustrating. As those of you who've watched my videos before know, I do not like the fact that archaeoastronomy is so frequently misrepresented and misunderstood. It'd be fine if you guys didn't fucking know about it, but the fact that you guys like don't know about it and then talk about it drives me batshit fucking crazy, man. Sorry. All right, we've got not just the paper that I talk about all the time, but there's other papers that have come out since that have refined Hoskins' work and Ventura's work on Malta. The paper here, I've talked about this before, the most likely candidate for the orientation of those temples is Crux, the Southern Cross, specifically Gamma Crucis. It would make sense because it's a navigational constellation. We know that from the Age of Discovery, and this is an island, and it was not visible now, but it was visible during the construction of those temples contemporary to the archaeology, not contemporary to Graham Hancock's 10,500 BC year. So my point is that I agree that Graham Hancock's serious bullshit is bullshit. But it's also bullshit to say that all this stuff is just, well, this faulty star map, blah, blah, blah. No, man. No, 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 no. She lifted freaking work from 30 years before, all right? All she's done is just change the date. But you take the same readings that were taken in the 90s from her first archaeoastronomies that did work there, the paper that I cited a minute ago, And she basically took those readings and was like, well, what if I move the dates around and maybe shift a couple of temples? And that's where she came up with what she came up with. So it's not a faulty star map. There's no faulty star map involved. What it is that she kind of jumble-fucked things around and lifted somebody else's work and claimed it as her own. And, of course, Graham Hancock is super-duper quick to just jump on board with anything and be like, oh, Atlantis? Well, let's go. So we end up here.
Graham suggests that there is a conspiracy by the established archaeologists to suppress evidence of a traveling lost civilization, which he later, near the end of the episodes, appoints to Atlantis. It took him about three episodes, really, like a complete three episodes before he mentions it, but there you have it, Atlantis. But more on that in the next episode review that I have to make for the channel and you guys to see. What do you think of this episode of Ancient Apocalypse and my arguments?
Now, I wouldn't go so far as to say there's a conspiracy of archaeologists against Graham Hancock. I would just say that there is this feeling of disdain and this kind of attitude like flat earther creationist. This isn't just anti-science. This is at the core of the problem with science on a fundamental level. We have to get rid of this shit. And it kind of comes across, I'll give you some great examples here. Videos like this that, in my opinion, are heavily under-researched. They're heavily undersided. They're just, you know, she watches it. She goes with the things that she knows off the top of her head. She's well-experienced with Malta. And she admits it in this video that I didn't put the clip in, but she talks about her being sick and whatnot. So that may have weighed in on this one. You know, again, I'm only responding to this video, so you can't ask me to watch another one to confirm that, right? But my point here is that we're looking at the situation of people that attack Hancock as a cottage industry in the archaeological YouTube sphere. Like, this video of this archaeologist teacher guy, and he holds up a fucking mad ball. It's an old baseball toy that has a weird face on it from when I was a kid. It might be a modern knockoff, I don't know. But he says, yeah, we dug this up. Graham Hancock's right. We hit this layer of 10,500 BC right when he wanted it. And look what we found. I mean, it's absurdly ridiculous. But it obviously got shared a lot because dude didn't have very many subscribers. And look at all the views that it's got. And this is super normal. You go find any channel that's an archaeologist and he'll have like, you know, 3,000, 2,000, 1,500 subscribers. And they'll have a video about Graham Hancock that's got 1,000 views, 10,000 views, 50,000 views. And it's anomalous, but it's how they got off the ground. And it's easy work. Because nobody goes around and debunks the stuff. Nobody goes around and talks the shit. At least nobody used to. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn here too hard. But there is something to be said for the fact that it seems like everybody felt like they could just do whatever the hell they wanted. They could just say whatever they wanted. They could just not do proper research and put the videos out there. One of the links in this one is to a, you know, it's to a paid freaking deal. One of the links in Dr. Miano's videos in German. I'm just, you know, you get to a point where it just feels like they feel like they're dealing with a flat earther. And I can understand that given some of Hancock's claims, to be honest with you. But there's a lot of his claims that if you don't conflate them with all the rest of the stuff and you take this claim on its own, you need to address it on its own, and then all of a sudden things get tricky. Well, that's compelling to someone like myself. So when it's dismissed just in mass because you can lump it in with ancient aliens and racism nowadays, Jesus fucking Christ. it's gross. Anyway, I could talk about this all day, but my big point here is that I'm going to continue to look at people like this that make these kinds of videos, not to be mean to them, but to basically either do one of two things. Y'all need to get better at your game, or you need to stop doing it. Either quit making these kinds of videos going after Hancock, or actually do your damn research. Because if you leave a bunch of glaring holes like this, and it's just like, well, I don't know, I just, you know, this is what I think based on my opinion, and here's no research or minimal research, I'm going to point that out. And that's not the end of the world, I suppose, but here in the YouTube sphere, that's some serious pwnage. Especially when you're talking to an electrician who's got absolutely no letters next to his name unless you count GED. So, have a good evening. Oh yeah, don't forget to like and subscribe and all that other stuff too, because this is YouTube, I have to say that stuff. And I was supposed to say something about Raid Shadow Legends, I don't fucking remember.